I'm Katie Frankowitz. You're listening to local and regional news on KMUN. More than 150 people protested in Astoria on Friday after U.S. Border Patrol agents killed a woman in Minneapolis on January 7th and the next day shot two people in Portland during a traffic stop. Community activists quickly planned rallies at multiple locations on Oregon's North Coast Friday and Saturday. In Astoria, the events drew larger crowds than expected. Gloria, an Astoria resident, was among those who attended the rally on Friday.
That could have been any of our daughters, could have been, you know, any of our family members. She wasn't doing anything wrong.
Gloria and others KMUN spoke with said they came to the rally to express their anger and frustration over what they described as escalating violence by ICE officers following the shooting of 37-year-old Minneapolis woman Renee Nicole Good. She was shot multiple times by ICE officer Jonathan Ross on January 7th. In video of the incident, she was shot while appearing to be moving her car. President Donald Trump and other administration officials have defended the shooting, saying Good was trying to run Ross over and that Ross acted in self-defense. On Saturday, an estimated 130 people attended a vigil in Astoria's Garden of Surging Waves, a site that honors and celebrates the Chinese heritage of the Lower Columbia River Basin and is located across the street from City Hall. Good was a focus of Saturday's vigil, but organizers also dedicated a bulk of the program to remembering people who died in 2025 while being detained by ICE or while being held by ICE or the Department of Homeland Security. Participants read people's names and gave brief descriptions of their lives and their deaths. At the end of the event, as people milled around, someone accidentally knocked over a glass candle holder set at the center of the garden. For Julia Hess, the shattering of the glass actually felt a little appropriate, given what had unfolded over the past few days. Hess is one of the leaders with Indivisible North Coast Oregon. Her group had organized the rally the day before.
So the threat is even stronger, but our dedication, none of us, I haven't talked to anybody that's scared away from doing what we're doing.
ICE has become a more regular presence on Oregon's North Coast in recent months. Officers have detained upwards of 14 people since early November. ICE has declined to provide any additional details about who officers have detained, why they were detained, their immigration statuses, or if they have been deported or are on a path to deportation. Some local law enforcement, including Clatsop County Sheriff Matt Phillips, as well as elected officials, have expressed concerns about tactics used by ICE officers in Clatsop County. Recently, ICE officers have been seen wearing identifying vests, but in earlier operations, there were no identifying badges or clothing. ICE has also started occasionally notifying local dispatchers that an operation is underway in the area. But police chiefs say they still often hear about an operation first through Facebook posts by community members. Astoria Police Chief Stacy Kelly says Good's shooting does not necessarily change how local law enforcement would interact with ICE or respond to reports of ICE in the community. But...
yeah, I would say if we have the opportunity, we would definitely make sure that we're there to observe. But up to this point, the only notification we've received from ICE is that they are in the county. They don't give us specifics, not even like a city or jurisdiction that they're in.
Kelly says the shooting in Minnesota should never have happened, though he emphasized that an investigation there is still underway, and he can't speak to what exactly happened. He says that locally, people who are acting as observers to ICE operations should be aware that they need to keep their distance and not interfere. He says he's been reassured by community partners that people are being trained to stay back and to try to avoid direct confrontation. Oregon Republicans on Sunday criticized the initial response by Democrats to the shooting of two Venezuelan immigrants in Portland. Joni Audenland reports.
Hours after federal law enforcement shot and injured two people last Thursday, Democrats in Oregon condemned the shooting and the presence of immigration officers in the state. a handful of Republican leaders responded Sunday, saying comments by Democrats were damaging in that they ignore the shooting victim's alleged ties to a Venezuelan gang. House Minority Leader Lucetta Elmer.
Instead, we watched as federal law enforcement officers were publicly condemned, compared to secret police, and portrayed as threats to the community while criminal facts were withheld.
There's been no public indication that local Democrats or Portland police knew the identities of the people shot before federal officials made it public, or that they chose to withhold any information. An attorney for one victim, Luis Nito Moncada, said there has been no evidence presented that his client is affiliated with a gang. I'm Joni Auden Land reporting.
Meanwhile, Portland Police Chief Bob Day said at a press conference on Friday that there appeared to be, quote, an association between the two people shot by federal agents and a Venezuelan gang. Federal authorities have said both the people who were shot were gang members. Day gave an emotional statement directed at Portland's Latino community.
Because I understand, or at least have attempted to understand through your voices, your concern, your fear, your anger. This information in no way is meant to disparage or to condone or support or agree with any of the actions that occurred yesterday.
Police say the two people who were shot are in stable condition and in the custody of federal authorities. We're going to keep the focus here on immigration and immigration enforcement-related stories for the next few minutes. Here's Skylar Butenchin.
A new report finds that federal officials continue to access Washington state data for immigration enforcement. That's despite a state law that prohibits sharing that outside of criminal investigations. Freddie Monadas reports.
Back in 2019, Washington State blocked ICE from accessing data from its Department of Licensing. But the University of Washington Center for Human Rights says those restrictions don't apply to Homeland Security investigations and Customs and Border Protection. UW Center found that Border Protection officials ran license plate data that led to at least 8 apprehensions since August. One of those cases happened in Burien, where Hugo Garcia is a council member.
Nuestras calles no deben ser de zonas de vigilancia.
Garcia is saying our streets should not be surveillance zones and that state systems should not be used as tools of fear. He says Burien and Washington are stronger because of their diversity and immigrant population. Garcia spoke at a press conference calling on state officials to stop sharing that information with immigration agencies. They say requiring a judicial warrant for that could bring transparency to the process. In Seattle, I'm Freddie Monadas.
Washington lawmakers are set to consider new restrictions on police use of automated license plate readers. Fred Thomas is a member of the Washington Coalition for Police Accountability, which supports the restrictions. He says law enforcement's use of these cameras to track vehicles could suppress lawful activities, like going to protests or other sensitive locations.
This technology needs to be clearly regulated, with common sense data protections, limits on how long data can be retained, and penalties for those who violate these regulations.
Dozens of Washington cities have contracts with Flock and other providers for cameras that record a vehicle's license plate information. A court ruling has found that the images are subject to public disclosure, raising concerns around stalking. Some cities stopped using the cameras over privacy concerns. The Washington Association of Sheriffs and Police Chiefs declined to comment.
The city of Bend turned off its AI-powered license plate cameras last Thursday. The city says it will not renew its contract with the company Flock Safety in May. Bend joins a number of cities that have stopped using the technology after growing concerns about federal surveillance and privacy. Bend City Council made the unanimous decision after local residents organized on social media, attended public meetings, and wrote the city. The Bend Police Department spokesperson said police purchased the technology to help investigate and solve crimes. Bend PD says the cameras will be removed in the coming days.
This is local and regional news on KMUN. I'm Katie Frankowitz. The chief of the Ilwaco Volunteer Fire Department, Jeffrey S. Archer, was arrested on Friday on a number of charges related to alleged child rape and pornography. The Chinook Observer reports that the charges are related to alleged incidents in Ocean Park and out of the area. Archer was arrested by the Pacific County Sheriff's Office. He's expected to make a preliminary appearance today in Pacific County Superior Court. He is currently jailed without bail. Archer became Ilwaco's full-time paid fire chief in November 2023. He had previously worked as a part-time chief and before that was a paramedic and division chief for the Pacific County Fire District No. 1. At least two Ilwaco City councilors have already weighed in on the arrest and the allegations Archer faces, writing statements on their city councilor Facebook pages. Ilwaco City Councilor Josh Phillips wrote that, quote, "There is absolutely no place for this. The safety and well-being of every member of our community, especially our children, is paramount." City Councilor Matt Lesnow wrote that the fire chief's arrest came as a shock. Lesnow wrote that if the, quote, "allegations prove true, I expect that justice will be served quickly and hope that those hurt can find healing." Some information in this story comes to us through a news partnership with the Chinook Observer. Today marks the start of the legislative session in Olympia. One of the first bills to be heard in the Senate Law and Justice Committee this week would change the standards for elected and appointed leaders in law enforcement. KUOW's Amy Radel has more.
Former Snohomish County Sheriff and now Democratic State Senator John Lovick is sponsoring the bill to make qualifications for sheriffs and police chiefs more consistent. The bill also calls on elected sheriffs to enforce not only the U.S. Constitution, but also state laws. Some sheriffs have said they will not enforce state gun restrictions, for example. A group supporting so-called constitutional sheriffs opposes the measure and accuses the state of stealing authority from voters who elect them. Meanwhile, the State Coalition for Police Accountability supports the bill and calls it one of their top priorities this session. I'm Amy Radel reporting.
Washington State's legislative session starts today. As OPB's Eric Newman reports, lawmakers will again try to address the state's budget shortfall.
Bills already filed for the 2026 session include proposals about state protections during immigration actions in Washington, a study about nuclear energy generation capacity, and a slew of proposed tax cuts. One overarching theme of the session will be bringing the operating budget back into balance. Lawmakers tried to close a $16 billion shortfall last year, but the state still faces a multi-billion dollar deficit over the next 4 years. It remains to be seen whether the budget will be balanced by passing new taxes, making more spending cuts, or both. I'm Eric Newman reporting.
County leaders across Western Washington have 2 weeks to report the extent of flood damage to the state. KUOW's Casey Martin reports.
There are a lot of numbers to wade through in each county. Thousands of flooded acres, tens of thousands of people ordered to evacuate. In King County, a third of all farmland was inundated by water for weeks. It all has to be submitted to state officials in 2 weeks for assistance. Lucia Schmidt directs Snohomish County's Department of Emergency Management.
68 people were pulled out of the floodwaters, along with 19 pets.
But Schmidt says, looking at the areas hit the hardest, the county's network of dikes and levees mostly did its job.
That directed so much of the floodwater into farmlands, and that's unfortunate for those farmers, but it saved many residences and many homes.
People can fill out surveys about how flooding impacted them. I'm Casey Martin reporting.
Turning now to news from Oregon on KMUN. Here's Skylar Butenchen.
Oregon Governor Tina Kotek is once again extending the state's homelessness emergency. Kotek declared the emergency as one of her first acts after taking office in 2023. Dirk Vanderhart reports.
With the new executive order, Kotek extended the emergency for up to a year. She says she'll reassess the state's progress every couple of months. Oregon has spent billions of dollars in recent years trying to address a housing shortage and homelessness crisis. And Kotek says her emergency declaration has been critical to steering resources to hard-hit areas. The governor's office says the state has prevented nearly 26,000 households from becoming homeless since 2023 and helped lift more than 5,500 people out of homelessness. Despite those successes, evidence suggests homelessness continues to rise. Recent reports in the Portland metro region, Salem, Eugene, and Central Oregon all found the problem had grown. The state of Oregon expects to release a new estimate of the total number of homeless residents statewide this month. I'm Dirk Vanderhart reporting.
Oregon's attorney general filed a lawsuit last week alleging that insulin manufacturers were part of an illegal pricing scheme that drove up the cost of their drugs. Amelia Templeton has more.
Pharmacy benefit managers are supposed to help health plans manage their prescription drug costs. But Oregon's lawsuit says the middlemen, known as PBMs, did the opposite. They kept cheaper forms of insulin off their list of approved options. And they profited by collecting rebates from drug companies that were pricing insulin way above what it costs to make. Those practices helped drive the price of insulin up to hundreds of dollars per dose, according to the lawsuit. States, cities, and insurance plans across the country have filed similar suits. Eli Lilly is one of the drug makers the state is suing. A spokesman said the company is working to make insulin more affordable, and similar suits have been dismissed or settled for no money. The cost of insulin has fallen for many after Congress capped the price for patients on Medicare at $35 a month, and drug companies offered more patient discounts. In Portland, I'm Amelia Templeton.
A fire at the Trask River Apartments in the city of Tillamook Sunday afternoon has displaced 12 people. Emergency responders also found one person dead at the scene of the fire. An investigation is ongoing, and no additional information about the person found deceased has been released yet. The American Red Cross is providing emergency housing and support services to residents affected by the fire.
Tillamook County Treasurer Sean Blanchard submitted her resignation back in December, effective January 2nd. She worked in the treasurer's office for 14 years and was first elected treasurer in 2018. Blanchard did not provide a reason for her resignation. Her term was set to expire later this year. Tillamook County Commissioners unanimously selected Deborah Jacob, the county's finance director, to serve in the vacated treasurer position through the end of this year. This story comes to us through a news partnership with the Tillamook Headlight Herald, online at tillamookheadlightherald.com.
Local and regional news on KMUN is brought to you by our news partners and the KMUN News Team. That includes host and producer Skylar Butenshin, volunteer Sylvia Thorpe, and me, news director Katie Frankowitz. This is KMUN.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. January 6th, the Missouri Secretary of State disqualified one-third of the qualifying signatures for a ballot initiative repealing a gerrymandered mid-decade congressional map. January 9th, his lawyer admitted in court that the state's language for the ballot initiative was, quote, likely to create prejudice. It's all part of an all-out effort to derail the pro-voter ballot measure. Secretary of State Denny Hoskins told the Associated Press in December, "I'm going to do everything I can to protect Governor Keogh's Missouri First map, the map the General Assembly passed," unquote. The ballot initiative constitutionally repeals the map, which splits Kansas City's 5th congressional district to gain one GOP seat. The Missouri Independent reports that January 6th, Hoskins rejected about 103,000 of the 305,000 qualifying signatures as having been collected too early. Petition organizers, People Not Politicians, likely still has enough of the 110,000 needed from 6 of 8 congressional districts to qualify, but the signatures must still be verified. Hoskins' decision was challenged in court. The group also challenged Hoskins' proposed language for the measure. In a pretrial hearing January 9th, an attorney for the Secretary of State admitted the language, quote, does come close enough to the line of being inherently argumentative and likely to create prejudice. She said the language would be rewritten. I'm Brian Beal.
You're listening to KMUN.